Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Maggie Westfold, your host today, along with Ursula Rudenberg. And hello to you, our listeners, and thank you for joining us to listen in. We won't be giving you the usual Friday news from Dennis Hart today because Dennis is on the road, headed back to Iowa from California, where he and his wife spend the winter. He'll be back on next week with his weekly news coverage.
And we'll be talking today with Slim from Slim's Country Market at Story City, hearing also about the Roosevelt Summer Sunday Concerts and about Art Walk happening today in Ames. Susan Guiazza from the City of Ames will catch up with us on what's going around town also later in the show.
Traditional style country produce markets along the highway are not as common as they once were. We're lucky to have a great one in our area on US 69 at Story City. I have so many great memories myself from childhood about Slim's Country Market, and I'm happy to have with us in the studio today John Slim Roney from Slim's Country Market on US 69 outside of Story City. Nice to have you here, Slim.
Thank you for having me down.
That fruit stand your dad started 74 years ago is truly a piece of Americana. Before you and I talk, though, Slim, I'd like our listeners to hear a few minutes from an interview we did in July of last year with Kurt Johnson, current owner of Slim's and the guy you work with every day. Let's listen to that.
I've known Slim for 20 years. We've just been friends. When you're in the produce business, you run across each other in different places, and I've known of the stand, so it just kind of worked for me. So I've been in retail for 25 years. I was a produce manager at Hy-Vee in Ames. Hy-Vee was great to me, but I walked away and just wanted to do something different, and then this opportunity came about. I could use all my produce contacts of growers and different brokers and bring them to this business. There's something to be said for making friends with your customers and knowing who they are and being able to help them. You don't know how many times a day I hear, thank you for being here. And you know what? That makes my day. That really does. It's actually perfect. It's just really gratifying to know that I got you something that's quality, something that you want, you know, something that wasn't pushed down your throat. Just on a daily basis, it's just really fun to interact with people, and you get to know them, you know, not just as customers, but you know about their family members and what's going on in their lives, and that's what makes it fun. That's why John, his dad was successful, that's why he was successful, and that's why we're doing it now, because people come here to see you. They say, I need a cantaloupe, and when are you going to use your cantaloupe? Today, tomorrow, this weekend? You get them one and you tell them exactly how to store it and keep it at their house. You know, you pick it out exactly. I want some peaches. Well, how many do you want that are ripe? How many do you want in 2 or 3 days? Now, you don't go to a grocery store in Ames and go down the produce aisle and say to one of the clerks, I need 10 peaches, but I need 4 of them I can use now and 6 of them that I can use in 2 days. Well, they're going to look at you like, that's why it's hard for anybody to just go open something like this, because you have to have the years and years of doing it to be able to do that.
Would you recommend somebody going into a small country grocery store like this? And if so, what advice would you give them?
Absolutely not, probably. It's one of those deals where it looks glorious from the outside, but like I tell my wife, if they had to, and every there, you would have a line of people that said they would want to do it and run it. Yeah. But if they walked in your shoes for a week, yeah, starting something would be very difficult. The biggest trouble now with places like this is actually finding suppliers, growers, the folks that grow the products. They're getting older. They're retiring. The kids are not taking over. That's the biggest issue and worry moving forward is your suppliers. We haven't had a muscatine melon in 20 years. It's all corn and soybeans now. They might have enough for themselves over there, but, you know, the kids took over. They just don't do they. It's hard to raise watermelon and cantaloupe physically, yeah. You know. And the margins get smaller and smaller because your suppliers want more for their product. Obviously, if they have a quality product, You can't, there's only so much you can get for something. Is this day and age, this place would not be able to be open if I wasn't married and had my wife have her job with benefits and a supplemental income, just because, let's be honest, with all the competition you have now in Ames, it would be very hard with expenses the way they are to try to start a small business with no tradition behind it. The tradition here with 74 years, Slim being here before, different contacts, and my background.
It looks like a simple roadside grocery store, but actually this is a lot of experience, contacts, and tradition is what really makes this happen, right?
Exactly, exactly. And hard work.
You glad you did this?
For sure. I'd never do it any other way. There's nothing better than working for yourself and having great customers and talking to them every day. There just isn't. It's the people in the community that make it fun. That's why you're here.
Slim, we just heard Kurt Johnson there talking. He's the current owner of Slim's Country Market. He was talking with Ursula and Paul Wearson. Story City was in there a little bit. They were talking about the country market business today and the reality of that. You grew up at Slim's Market with U.S. 69 as your front yard and a cornfield as your backyard. What was that like? And what are some of your earliest memories from the time, your time as a child working with your dad and mom? And your dad was John Roney Sr., Slim Sr., and your mom, you said her name was Altame. She went by Susie.
Altame, yes.
And your siblings? You have brothers and sisters?
Yes, there was five brothers and a sister.
So you all worked the business. What was that like, growing up working in the business? And give us just a little picture of life back then.
Well, I have to remember back 74 years ago.
Right.
But my memories of the market started at the Flowing Well, or the Artesian Well. There, a couple miles south of Story City, of course. And I was really too young to really participate too much until I got up around 10 or 11 years old. But like Kurt said there on that interview, it's a different situation nowadays than it used to be. We got up at 6 o'clock in the morning and went and picked sweet corn, maybe a couple of hundred dozen to last us through the day. And the next day we would be over to Pat Nolan's strawberry patch there, about 5 miles from the market. Mm. And you'd pick 100 to 150 quarts, not the little plastic boxes,
wow,
but the quarts. And I know that Dad paid 12 cents a quart for those, and we picked them, and Dad sold them for 25 cents a quart.
Mm-hmm. Good old
days.
And
it took about 100 to 125 at that time to get through the day. But the artesian well was a big draw as far as bringing people in. I mean, a lot of people just stopped and got a drink of water because they've been there for I don't know how many years. Mm-hmm. And that water was 53 degrees year around, and it was closely checked by the state temperature and for whatever, because it came from a shallow stream under the ground. And there were seven of those wells across the Story City area. But, I guess my first memories of that particular time was just unloading fruit, unloading watermelons. When Mom and Dad started back there, we moved from Colo to Story City, actually Randall, excuse me, but in 1949. Mm-hmm. And it was just getting to be too much of a drive from Colo to Story City every day. But I think we just got up early and we worked all day, and we didn't think anything about it. There was no electricity there in 1949 or the previous years. And then Bill Rood moved up there and built a gas station right beside the market. Well, he had to have electricity. I think that was in 1950. So they just run the wire on over to the market. So we didn't have electricity. So there are so many things that, you know, that come into my head.
Sure.
We used to have to take the one of the trucks and run into Story City every day and get ice. Because we didn't have coolers, we had ice. So you get the big blocks of ice and you throw them in the machine, and it kept some watermelon cold or some cantaloupe cold. But
that was just life was just like that those days. You did what you had to do to make things work. Whatever the artesian, I remember that's a big part of my memory is jumping out Sunday afternoons is when we would go there. My mother was a Missouri woman, and she loved those Missouri peaches, and she would make my dad take us on Sunday afternoons to Slim's. And I can remember bailing out of the back seat to go get a drink at the artesian. Just a little pipe coming up out of the ditch.
That's about all it was.
And there's great, great, great memories. Everybody knew your dad. Everybody knew Slim back in those days. My husband remembers a couple things about his experiences. I asked him the other day, what do you remember? He said, well, I remember if Dad pulled the car off the road at Slim's, we would get something. And then we knew if Slim started talking to Dad, we'd get a watermelon. And so tell us a little about your dad's people skills and his gift for selling those products.
Well, Dad's parents, my grandparents, they came to Arkansas from Pennsylvania. And when my grandparents got to Arkansas up around the Rogers area, they started orchards and strawberry patches. And it was just kind of in Mom and Dad's blood to be raised. I mean, Mom picked strawberries for a penny a quart when she was a kid. And there again, that's another story. But my granddad actually paid people in wooden coins that they could take those coins at the end of the week and take them into Rogers and trade them in for cash or product, merchandise.
Right.
And I think that's way back when don't take any wooden nickels. I think that's where that all came from.
Probably.
Dad had a knack to talk to people.
Yeah.
And I am so pleased that he was like that. But my mother was good with people, too.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't just jump out of the car, run and buy something. It was, hey, if you had a few minutes, Dad was going to talk to you.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
You look, I don't remember his face, but you have his build in the hat. And I remember the vision of your dad, the image of your dad being around there.
Thank you.
It's just, to me, it's just heartwarming that you're still involved there because it ties back to such great memories. Your mom's, we've talked a little about your mom. What her role day-to-day, she just, was there any specific part of it that she was in charge of or just how'd that go?
Well, Mom kind of oversaw everything. And if she thought Dad was bringing in maybe a little bit too much produce, she would say, hey, Dad, better slow down on this. We got a rainy week coming up or maybe a major weekend coming up.
Yeah.
Better send another truck, you know. Mom took care of the finances. She did all the banking. Dad didn't have a clue.
So he depended on her that way.
Mom ran things, and if Mom had to get a little sharp with maybe a customer for squeezing the tomatoes or pinching the strawberries, it was never Dad that said anything. It was always Mom.
Yeah, doesn't that just seem that's just the way it usually goes? That's fun to hear. I everybody talks about Slim, you know, but I love, you said your mom's name was Alta May, but she went by Susie.
And I don't know where that came from. I can understand where Dad's nicknames. Nickname came from, Slim. He was 6'3" and weighed probably 160 pounds, 165 at, but Susie, I'm not sure where that come from. I suppose it was quicker to say, hey, Susie, than it was, hey, Alta May.
Yeah, maybe a dad or a grandpa called her that.
Yeah.
I heard Kurt say, I don't know if it was in the recording, but he's told me that his best products today are Missouri peaches, watermelon, cantaloupe, tomatoes, and sweet corn when it's in season. What do you remember as the product that moved the fastest? Do you remember?
Well,
back in those days?
Now, when you say back in those days, let's just go back to, say, probably 1950 or 52. There again, everything was so seasonable. Strawberries started off early. Asparagus started off early. And there was no, of course, any peaches or watermelon grown in Iowa back in May. That was a later thing, like Kurt said in an interview. That was a muscatine thing the first week in August.
Right.
But when Mom and Dad started that market, they had basically watermelon, cantaloupe, bananas, and tomatoes.
Okay.
That was the main thing because there was no refrigeration.
Right, right.
But nobody sold grapes back in those days, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You could buy a few grapes. Now they've got 20 or 30 different varieties of red and green and black grapes. And they were just putting things together and growing in the business themselves.
All the way from honey to display of different kinds of apples. Then there's a gift shop. The whole thing is very different from in the past. You're still a part of that business with Kurt. What keeps you there?
I really enjoy, let's say, just hanging out with Kurt.
Yeah.
And he needs somebody to paint the signs. And we just finished up plant season. It was huge this year.
Mm-hmm.
Those benches get heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm the one that's available to run out in the morning and help him move the benches out and go out in the evening. I can paint the signs. Yesterday I mowed out there a little bit. Today I'm going to go out and weed eat. I'll check on Kurt when I get through with this interview. I'll still have time to go and help him open up this morning.
Yeah.
But Kurt's just a swell guy. He's more knowledgeable about produce than I originally thought, because I hadn't really worked with him. I knew him through Hy-Vee. I've known Kurt for a long time. And he's knowledgeable. But like I said, he carries, and it's a public demand now to have more than just a watermelon and a cantaloupe and an apple and a peach for sale.
Mm-hmm.
But
I know myself walking in a place like that, just finding a gift shop, that's like, ooh.
Yeah, I kind of think that was his wife's idea, JC's idea.
And, well, it's a nice touch.
It used to be our home. I built a home back there in 1986, three-bedroom house.
Yeah.
We were always home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you lock the doors.
Yeah.
Take five steps and you're home, you know.
That's
and then I could take care of trucks and yard work and everything after we closed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But a long time ago, we were open till 9 o'clock.
Oh.
But so it was 9 to 9, 7 days a week.
Mm.
Never closed once we opened. We used to open around St. Patty's Day in late March.
Right.
And then we ran it till never open later than Halloween.
Okay.
So, but there was always plenty to do after hours. It's just not a 9 to whatever, 9 to 7 now. There's more to it than that.
You never experienced punching a clock?
No, I've never done
that. Thanks, Slim. This has been fun talking with you about Slim's Country Market and your life there and a little bit about the way it goes today. And I want to thank you for coming in. You got any parting thoughts? Any one thing that you didn't get a chance to talk about?
Well, like I said, it was unfortunately, it was a short interview. I like to talk. And we're kind of trying to cover 74 years of
yes.
Slim's Fruit Market in yeah. a matter of a half an hour, you might say.
Does not and do it justice.
It really doesn't do
right.
it justice. But
well, we're going to work on doing another program someday and make it a longer one.
Hey, that would be great.
There's
a lot more to be said to yeah. Slim's Market in the past, mm-hmm. and there's a lot more to be said to Slim's Market at the present. As far as those parting thoughts, I am so proud of my folks, what they did, and they raised six kids, put us all through school. We learned mm-hmm. to deal with public. We know how to talk to people.
Yeah.
It was just an amazing, and all of us boys and my sister really worked hard, but we didn't
yep.
know we was working hard.
Wonderful, you know, to think back on.
Slim, yeah. do you think it's important to have country markets like these?
Well, I think it is, but that interview there, that's the first time I'd heard that interview with Kurt, but Kurt's absolutely right. The farmers markets in town, I'm not going to say that they're taking over, but to go out here and start a fruit market alongside of the road with the insurances, the utilities. See, I used to have six guys that drove for me, and I always had an availability of mm-hmm. what I wanted to buy.
Well, why do you think it's important to have them still?
Well, it still gives people that... I'm not sure exactly what, the word that I'm looking for, but... people love going to the Story City Fruit Market.
I mean, so it creates really happiness.
Yeah, and they can visit, they can hang out.
Uh-huh.
It's not just run in and grab something and wait in a checking line to get out the door,
uh-huh.
you know. And Kurt does have a nice variety of produce up there.
Uh-huh. So it creates happiness.
Well, I'm happy going out and talking to Kurt.
Yes, it does. It creates happiness. Uh-huh. That's
and,
the way I feel
yeah,
when I stop.
Yeah,
it's just
good.
A warm feeling.
Mm-hmm. And Kurt's really, really into it. He's he's really involved. I mean, he lives it every day.
Mm-hmm.
So Kurt's going to do a great job, and he's probably got, he's 45 years old, so he's got mm-hmm. another 20 or 25 years, and he can make that century mark at mm-hmm. the fruit market,
yep.
you know,
mm-hmm.
but and I think he'll do very well. But some folks don't think about it. Everything is seasonable. Like you said, the Missouri peaches are around the 4th mm-hmm. of July. Right now we're doing Georgia peaches.
Mm-hmm.
There's 200 growers of peaches, but they're not in Georgia, but they're not all good peaches.
Mm-hmm.
Kurt's got some great peaches,
mm-hmm.
Missouri peaches, best there is.
Mm-hmm.
I was the first one to bring Missouri peaches to Iowa in, let's see, it's been 36 years ago. I didn't know what I was going to start. I bought about $400 worth of peaches, and I had to question them. And all of a sudden, I laid them out and let them get ripened up just a little bit, you know, warmed up. And my goodness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my mom was right.
Yeah.
Those are good things.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, even Missouri, they grow a lot of peaches in Missouri, but mm-hmm. Bader Farms is the only peach that I would buy, and that's the only one that I would suggest. They come from Campbell, Missouri, clear down in the Boot Heel of mm-hmm. Missouri, and it's a long ways to haul them.
Yeah.
But they're great peaches.
Well, we definitely have to have Slim back
yes.
for a whole hour and do a Heart of Iowa show.
Yes, I think we need
history.
To work on that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
And
it's been fun.
Thank you for having me down, girls. I wasn't mm-hmm. sure what to expect here this morning,
yeah,
but I was
nice
looking
studio,
forward
right?
to it. And I would like to say thanks to all the customers and good friends, good neighbors that have been shopping and supporting Slim's Fruit Market for the last 74 years. It's just been great.
All right. Thank you.
is Local Talk, and I'm Ursula Rudenberg here with Maggie Westfold. That was music by Trapicanta, a Latin dance band who will be the first band to perform at the first Roosevelt Summer Sundays concert on Sunday, June 3rd, which is coming right up. Colin Berzek, our KHOI intern, recently spoke with a musician who will be performing with the band on Sunday on the grounds of the former Roosevelt Elementary School in Ames. So here's Colin and the musician.
This summer marks the 16th annual Roosevelt Summer Concerts right here in Ames. Starting June 3rd through August 19th, a variety of local and regional bands will be playing at the Annex at 7 p.m. every Sunday night. We're talking all sorts of different music. Blues, jazz, indie, folk, even Latin. One of those artists was nice enough to stop in and grace us with his presence today, James Bean. James, how's it going today,
hey,
man?
I'm good, man. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you for stopping in. So we'll just jump right into it, just to let the audience and listeners know... I guess a little bit of who James Bean is. Where are you from, James?
I grew up in the Des Moines area, Norwalk primarily, just a little bit south of the Des Moines airport there. Went to high school there, graduated from there, went to college in Creston at Southwestern Community College for about 3 years. Then ever since then, been a Des Moines resident, so roughly 20 years now.
All right, so you're familiar with the area mostly.
Yeah, absolutely.
How long have you been playing music for?
Oh, started on trumpet at the age of 10, so I mean, if you can include my school band days, about that long, so it'd be about 31 years.
31 years.
Yeah. Picked up guitar around the age of 12. You know, I saw a guitarist and a drummer, they're about a year older than me, in junior high, and they did a talent show where they was just those two playing, and it just blew me away, and I'd never seen music being played like that in front of me before. And it was kind of one of those things where I said, oh, well, on some level, I gotta be a part of this. And so that following summer, like a couple months later, started guitar lessons, and the rest is history.
So that was really an influential, I guess, moment in your life to start playing music.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've talked about it many times, and it's just a pivotal thing where I just kind of, for the first time, really felt driven to do something.
How would you describe your musical sound?
Very guitar based. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of guitar. I'm a big lover of all music, in particular the great American art forms of the last 100 years, so some more than others, but it generally revolves around blues, a little bit of country. A big fan of the 60s and the artists that came out at that time, and then the artists that were influenced by them. Compare us to anybody, you know, I'd put us in the, Allman Brothers, Tom Petty kind of thing, you know, very guitars up front, hopefully some melodies. To me, it's a very American sound.
Would you say your musical influences are?
Kind of, it all starts with B.B. King. Even before I started playing guitar, my friends and I were all into the band Aerosmith, and that was something
were
all obsessed with. And then I started playing guitar, and B.B. King was huge. My grandmother got me a book of his songs at the time, and also he had done a cameo on The Cosby Show. And then I started reading interviews with all of these guitar players that I loved, who, like Eric Clapton and Stevie Ray Vaughan and Jimmy Page. Kind of everybody pointed to him as the father figure
of
that style.
Do you have any other band names in mind before you settled on James Bean?
My name?
Yeah, right.
Well, I've been in bands throughout the years. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had a band in the late 90s called the McKenzies, and we would play here often. We played the M Shop a handful of times. I'd love to go back and play there. I think fondly about that place.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the McKenzies. Then I did two or three other bands, and I kind of noticed that I was developing, the risk of sounding arrogant, developing a bit of a following where, you know, people were asking me where I was playing. And so eventually I decided 4 or 5 years ago that I was just going to do my name as the band name.
So how did you come to meet the other members that are currently in your band?
Jeff had been playing with a couple other people that I know when I went out to see my friend Jeremy Alvarez, who's great. He has a band called Three-Legged Dog in Des Moines. Is my best friend. And Jeff was playing with him. And so after a few times, I just felt like, you know, oh, hey, why don't you come and play a show and we'll just kind of see how it goes. And he's a fantastic player, but even more so, just great guy to be around. And as I get older, I find that, you know, I love all the musicians I play with are great. At this point, I'd almost rather have just somebody that I, you know, that hypothetical situation of like, if I had to live with this person in a van for 3 weeks, would we all make it?
That's a good way to look at it. Yeah.
And in some ways, I mean, that's a good foundation more so than musical ability sometimes. Although, like I said, they're stellar players. And then, Chris Fordyce, our bassist, I had lost contact with him. Last time I saw him was maybe around 2002, and he was roommates with a former bandmate of mine, the sax player named Nathan Peoples, and hadn't seen him for a number of years, and then, believe it or not, our wives became Facebook friends and started developing a friendship there, and then we reconnected after 14 years. Yeah. So, yeah, that's how we got those two. Saren Evans sings lead and backup with us at times. We've more and more over the last couple of years have started to put more her songs where she sings lead. She's a fantastic singer. And then Seth Hedquist is my other brother on guitar. He and I have developed a really deep relationship.
So as far as the music process, I guess music making process goes, do you write all of your songs? Do you write all the lyrics to your songs?
Well, as far as original material goes, when we go out and play, it's kind of 50-50 because there are some songs that I didn't write that I love playing.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
And the band makes them sound good. And I always go back to the idea of, you know, well, when you look at it, a symphony is a cover band. And most jazz groups, combos or otherwise, are cover bands. But as far as my own music goes, I really wanted that to be, especially in the last 5 or 6 years, I wanted that to be the challenge, just to see if I could do it.
So out of all the songs that you've personally written, which one would you say is your favorite and why?
They all mean something just a little bit different to me each time. I don't know, there's one that I wrote called Mission where I try not to get too much into like specifics as to why I wrote it or what it means to me, because I also try to write, not only write lyrics, but write lyrics in such a way that, you know, like if you listen to one of my songs, you have your own life experiences.
So you're leaving it open to interpretation.
Yeah, almost. And that's what I try to do, because I do feel like if I'm not connecting with people as a musician, then I don't want it. So Mission is kind of one of those songs where, you know, as I get older and as I experience more, I feel like I'm headed in the right way insofar as just becoming a better person and growing as a person. But then I just have the occasional hiccup where I feel like a little bit of one step forward, two steps back kind of thing. But I think as humans, we owe it to ourselves and the people around us to keep trying.
How would you say your music has evolved from when you first joined a band?
Oh, when I first joined a band, I mean, first off, I never wrote lyrics. I was in a band with a singer who, A, wrote incredible lyrics, B, was and is an incredible vocalist, and C, took a look at some lyrics that I wrote one summer and said, no, these aren't good. and that was enough for me to kind of stay off that path for a while, where I just focused on the instrumental side so much that I was in a band at one point where we did primarily instrumental songs. So early on, it was very guitar-oriented, also very in-your-face, a little bit of dynamics, but it's still pretty rock in-your-face.
Right.
That band was influenced by a lot of 90s groups, in particular the Black Crowes.
Okay.
They're still one of my favorite bands. But, you know, that bands like that have a lot of...
We're referring to the McKenzies, right? Is that?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
McKenzies, yep. Have a lot of... Bands like that, I mean, there's a lot of guitar, so even the subtle moments are still, like, not subtle. So then it was much more guitar-oriented. I didn't worry about the lyrics or the vocals. Also, to a degree, didn't feel like anybody wanted to hear what I had to say as a vocalist or as a lyricist. As time has gone on, I've grown more confident in those abilities.
So earlier, you said that you really enjoyed playing at the maintenance shop. And I see also that you have shows, you do shows in Ankeny, you do shows in Des Moines. Where would you say your favorite venue is to play at and why?
You know, anymore, my favorite venues are, they tend to be the ones where you least expect them to be good. For about 4 years now, my band and I have been playing at the Greenwood Lounge in Des Moines, which is, it's on Ingersoll. There are a lot of great music venues along the Ingersoll Avenue area in Des Moines. it's not a place, like when you walk in, you wouldn't expect it to feel as good as it does.
So it's kind of deceiving.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of part, I describe it as part church, part dive bar. You know, there's the bar and there's the corner TV playing the Cubs game. You know, it's just there. It's nothing too fancy. It's dark a lot.
Pretty low key place, you know? You'd say.
Yeah. But man, from the first gig we played there, I had one of the best musical experiences I've ever had during our first or second gig there, where it just felt like, you know, maybe it doesn't matter like where you play. I don't know. They're just, some places just have magic to them.
I saw on your Facebook page that you post tutorials on how to play guitar on certain songs. I mm-hmm. saw covers of Guns N' Roses. So are you a teacher? Do you teach guitar?
Yeah. I mean, that's, in a way, that's my day job. I own and operate a music lesson studio in Des Moines called Central Iowa Music Lab. And We have a little over 200 students. About 225 is where we run. And we teach guitar, piano, drums, voice, the band instruments now we teach, which I would rather that be left up to the public schools, but you know, with each year comes more arts, you know, funding gets cut, and so parents start looking for places to do, for their kids to do lessons for band, and you know, until that problem gets fixed, we try to help them out.
For some of the young listeners that might be tuning in on this interview, what advice would you give them to start their own band?
Find your friends. You know, make your friends learn instruments. Go that way. You know, I find if the personalities are there already, and you know, sometimes things change, but for the most part, if you find the personalities and the people that you get along with, and I guess to a degree, part of that includes a certain amount of work ethic. You know, someone told me a while back, do one thing a day to propel yourself forward as far as should you want to do music professionally.
This is kind of similar to the question I asked earlier. Is there a particular song that you enjoy playing live in front of an audience?
I mean, it's funny because it's different every time, I think. I write a song with the intention that every time I sing it, it's going to be great. It's going to feel great to me. I'm going to be excited about it. I'm going to, you know, I want it to be something I can sing for 30 years and be all right. But sometimes the crowd reaction, sometimes there'll be one song where they'll love it, and then the next gig, it'll be a different song. The fan reaction will be, or the listener reaction will be different. So, I mean, there are tunes, like I said, maybe some night I'm just feeling like, you know, Mission is the song I'm really looking forward to playing. It's really not until that back and forth dynamic between band and audience. When that's strongest, I won't know if that's my favorite song until after we've played it. I hope that makes sense.
Right, right. All right. Well, thank you so much for stopping in and letting me interview you today. Yeah. Again, it's James Bean. He will be performing on the 22nd of July at 7 p.m. That's at the Annex at the Roosevelt Summer Concerts right here in Ames. Thank you for listening.
Have you ever had the notion that life is just one great big tug of war? No, no. It's just push and pull, no ran and dug. You have to wonder what the hell it's for.
Ursula, KHOI is part of a great event each year in Ames called Art Walk that showcases the Main Street Cultural District and downtown businesses and over 60 community artists, I believe. What is Art Walk, and when will that be happening?
Well, Art Walk is happening tonight. In fact, if you're listening to local talk in the evening, it is already in action. And a whole lot of people are invited to come down. And the public is invited to come down to Main Street. And it's a way to promote the Main Street Cultural District area and invite people to come in and visit stores. And there are artists in the stores. And KHOI, we have a tradition. And that we paint a mural here in the station every year, and it's called the Doodle Squad.
Ah.
And we have music to it so that it's inspired by music. And you, the public, or you, the person listening to this radio station, are certainly invited to come down and add your piece to the mural. The mural painting is open to everybody who visits the station. And we do have regulars. We have people who come every year and paint the exact same thing. Every year on the mural.
I didn't
every year
that.
There's a new mural.
So maybe I can come back and do another dragonfly?
Exactly. And then we show off the mural in the 4th of July parade. So that's Art Walk. And it's lots of fun. There's refreshments. Reds Blues plays too, and it's a great band. He's our house band.
Red is my neighbor, Larry Stoltenberg.
Red's Blues,
great guy.
It's lots of fun, the music. And the painting is lots of fun. We have a lot of paint here. We have brushes. We have people to help you. We have refreshments. We have people to watch. It's just lots of fun. And Lana Noctegal always comes and paints her flying pigs, which is one of the signature. We have certain signature looks on the mural. So that's it. So come on down and join us tonight. I think it starts at 5 o'clock. And it goes until 9 o'clock.
It's advertised as 5 to 8.
5 to 8. Okay. So come on down and join us. It's lots of fun. Or if you just want to come and watch, it's lots of fun too. And down beneath the mural, we have a mini mural for the short ones, the young kids. And so they're welcome to express themselves freely too on the short mural. They can be on the big mural too, but the short mural is down on their level and is indestructible. So there's lots of room for expression from young kids, too. So come on down. It's what you might say is a colorful event. Really
Is. Good one. I know you're station manager, but your background, your passion is art. So I'm sure is there any of your favorite part of Art Walk for you, or is it just
– I just enjoy watching. I enjoy the people that come and do, like, really amazing little – you know, they just paint something really amazing on the wall that always just kind of, what the heck is that? And then it turns into this, like, you know, cornstalk with a face or some, you know, some really beautiful little thing. So I really get a kick out of that. But all of the businesses all up and down Main Street have artists in them. So it's very worthwhile to go out. And I like to take a break and go and look at the different artwork that's happening in other businesses. I think we're the only place where you can participate. The other places have professional artists who are demonstrating their craft, and it's a beautiful thing. And there's usually refreshments also, so you can, you know, relax and enjoy yourself during that time. So it's really worth coming on down. It's a moment where Main Street kind of shines.
Can you read off the website, or do you want me to? I did find one.
AmesDowntown.org/events,
there
right?
There we go.
AmesDowntown.
And it's good coverage on there. It's very informative. If you click on Art Walk there, and it tells you everything that's going to happen. And I saw one fun comment online from Rob Wallace, who's a local woodworker. He's going to be at the Octagon, and he said there will be free wood shavings in front of the Octagon. So there you go.
Okay. Well, Susan Guiazda from the City of Ames is with us. She joined us. She's in the studio to talk about what's going on in Ames beyond Art Walk. So good morning, Susan. So what's happening what's coming up for the next month?
Well, good morning. It's great to be here. We were just talking about it. I can't believe it's been a month already. Today is the 1st of June, and so much is going on already. Last weekend, over Memorial Day, we opened the Furman Aquatic Center. It's typically not this warm at this time of the year, so we had quite an opening weekend. Lots and lots of people came to join us. And it's just a reminder that the Furman Aquatic Center is completely weather-dependent. So if you're ever curious about whether the facility is open or not, the staff really encourages you to go on Facebook and look at the Furman Aquatic Center Facebook page, where they can do immediate updates on closings. While we've had very, very warm weather recently, we've also had some kind of unpredictable weather. And, of course, there are a lot of guidelines in running an aquatic facility. If there's thunder in the area, they need to shut down. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard to say exactly these are the hours. We certainly have the hours that we anticipate being open, but of course that could change almost on, an hourly, even a half hourly kind of basis. So if you're not a Facebook user and you still want to know what's happening with the Furman Aquatic Center, call the Parks and Recreation Hotline, that number 515-239-5434. 239-5434. That's a really important number to have. It will give you updates on the Furman Aquatic Center. Once they do close for weather, they are required to stay closed a certain amount of time before they can reopen to make sure that any inclement weather has cleared the area. And again, it's all about being safe. So people will try to message them, try to email them, and honestly, staff is busy during these times of hot weather, and so the best thing to do is try to get that information yourself, either by calling the hotline or checking that Facebook page. That's a great way to keep up to date on what's happening at Furman. We're anticipating a fantastic summer just based on our opening weekend. We always open Memorial Day weekend, and I can remember some Memorial Day weekends wearing a jacket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It can be chilly.
That can happen.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So we talked about Art Walk happening tonight. Tomorrow, Saturday, is Summerfest in Campustown. City of Ames has several departments participating in Summerfest. During the Summerfest family hours from 3 to 7, you can tour Fire Station Number 2, which is on Welch Avenue. Mm-hmm. You can visit the Bookmobile, which will be down on Welch Avenue. Say hello to some of our Ames police officers or get a glass of great tasting Ames water. We'll have some Ames water jugs out there.
It's a very family-friendly event.
It is. It really is a way to kind of enjoy Campustown at a sort of a slower time of the season and get out. There's lots of activities. And then after 7, it does change. There is a beer garden. So usually that's at the point. Kids want to go home and have some dinner. So great event on Saturday, June 2nd, for families, 3 to 7, Welch Avenue, and then continuing into the evening for the adults. We just want to do a shout-out. I'm sure everybody has heard about the fabulous donation from the Rich and Mary Fitch family towards the Healthy Life Center. Again, that's a proposed facility on Ontario and Shoal Road, kind of centrally located right in the city. Great new building that would house Heartland Senior Center, some Mary Greeley Therapy, an indoor aquatic center, a track, demonstration kitchens to learn how to cook, a lot of different purposes suggested for this sort of wellness facility. And the Fitch family kind of kicked off that fundraising with a $3 million donation announced this past month. So if you're curious about learning more about the Healthy Life Center, what it is, and what it might offer, please check out the city's website, cityofames.org/healthylifecenter. That was a really nice sort of unexpected surprise. And the Fitch family, if you're not familiar, has a history of giving to aquatic events. Mary Fitch, it was Mary Furman Fitch, and it was her family that gave the foundational donation for the Furman Aquatic Center.
That's very interesting.
Yeah. A bit of sad news, although maybe not shocking to people who followed it. The state announced that emerald ash borer was found in Ames recently. That is the invasive beetle that kills ash trees. So we've known it's been in Story County for several years, but recently we've gotten notified that it is in Ames. It was shown up in a private property in West Ames just recently, and so it's here. So if you have ash trees, and I do have an ash tree in my front yard, you should take precaution. Watch that tree for any kind of health issues. There is the possibility of injecting trees to try to sort of hold off the infestation of these beetles. And then a lot of people are opting to remove them and replant as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, it takes trees a long time to get established. And the longer you wait, you know, yeah, the smaller the tree that you plant will be.
What what is the best way to get information if you kind of and want to educate yourself about your tree?
So the city's plan, the city of Ames is of course concerned about trees on public property, and we looked at the parks. In fact, the city has done a tree inventory, and there are more than 2,000 ash trees in the public right of way. Mm-hmm. And just to remind people, the right of way is that space between the sidewalk and the curb. So yeah, that's city property, and if there is an ash tree in that property, the city will take care of it. Mm-hmm. If you don't have a sidewalk, you still have a public right-of-way. It's usually from the curb 10 foot towards your home. And so if there's a tree in that space, the city has that inventory, and the city is watching it. We have an aggressive 20-year plan to take out the vast majority of ash trees and replace them with a diversified species. When we did the tree inventory, we determined that the city has a higher than recommended level of ash trees. 16% of all trees, public trees, are ash trees. So the forestry experts recommend no more than 10% of any kind of species. Mm-hmm. So we're gradually taking those trees out and replacing them. And you'll see that around the community. Sometimes people get a little confused when they see us taking out what look to be healthy trees.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there is a replace and replant process and a plan on our website. If you have a tree on your private property, we recommend that you contact an arborist, somebody local that you trust, a landscaping company, and develop a plan for your own property. Mm-hmm. And if you do have questions about emerald ash borer in general, you can go to our website, cityofames.org/trees. You can find out more about the city plan and maybe some ideas on what you might do personally for your own tree plan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Some other things. We've had some severe weather. I think I've noticed hail a couple of times already this spring. And with severe weather can come power outages. And just a reminder of what to do if your power is out. It's amazing how many people think that their block is out or their neighborhood is out, and really it's just them. Maybe perhaps it's a blown fuse, something in your own home. So what you need to do is check if the power is out in your entire home. So make sure it's not just your living room or your bedroom area, that it's the entire home. And then look for a trip breaker or fuse, and then check with your neighbors. Is this more widespread than just your property? Are other people out as well? And then we ask you to call our power outage number. And even if you're talking to your neighbors and three of them have called, we really want you to call that number, 515-239-5240. Write that down, 239-5240. You need to call that even if every neighbor has called, because you could be that one home that is fed from a different source of power. And so everybody else could come back on and you could still be out because we didn't know you were out in the first place. When you call that number, it associates the number with an address. That data gets forwarded to our power, to our line workers. They are mapping that to determine where the issue is. It helps us pinpoint the problem. So we really encourage you to do that. And if you haven't associated a phone number with an address, we encourage you to register. And you can do that during the day. You can do that.
These are landlines, though. If you call from a cell phone, it doesn't really give the city any information, does it?
Right. And that's why we have a form online.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You can go to cityofames.org/outage, and you can associate that cell phone with an address.
Oh, I see.
If you don't do it, the 239-5240 number is an automated system.
Uh-huh.
And it will take you through a series of questions, and it will ask you your address. It will also ask you, are you calling about this address, if you've called in the past? And the process is just faster if you've filled out that form online. And if you haven't filled it out online, when you call, you'll get it taken care of.
Okay. And again, that's 239-5240.
Yep. Always power outage. Call that number.
And we're going to put that on the website, too.
Yeah. If you want to see who has been affected by a power outage and you have access to the web, go to cityofames.org electric outage. It will show you a real-time map. It will show you where the outage is at. It will show you how many – it'll give you a number of customers out. It's really kind of handy. Even if you don't experience a power outage, you can look at it anytime. I look at it sometimes just during the day. It's always clear, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
But after severe weather, you can pull it up and see if there's been some problems, particularly if you get a friend or somebody that calls you, hey, is your power out? Go to the electric outage map and look and see.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of helpful information to have. Again, providing you with that information to help you make decisions.
So. Susan, we're running out of time, so tell us what else we need to talk about.
One last thing. We're still selling power packs for our electric, our solar project. So if you've ever thought about perhaps investing in that, get more information, cityofames.org/solar, to learn more about how to be part of SunSmart Ames, the community solar farm.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. This has been Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, a program where we explore the stories, people, and places of Central Iowa. And I've been your host, Maggie Westfold, along with Ursula Rudenberg. We've just heard from Susan Guiazda with the City of Ames, and before that we talked with Slim Roney from Slim's Country market at Story City, and we heard an interview with a musician from Tropicante Band who will be performing at the first Roosevelt Summer Sunday Concert this Sunday, June 3rd. Ursula and I also talked about Art Walk happening today, June 1st, 5 to 8 p.m. in downtown Des Moines. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI at 89.1 FM. You can also hear Local Talk anytime online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. KHOI is also streaming live online at khoifm.org. Our theme music, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you'd like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. So come and see if you'd like to join the Local Talk team. Please remember that you, the listener, are the most important part of Local Talk. Your participation as audience and your generous donations help make it all possible. And now, thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
KHOI is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. The Ames Main Street Farmers Market brings local food and fun every Saturday, located between the 300 and 400 blocks of Main Street, including Tom Evans Plaza. The Farmers Market brings fresh local fruits, veggies, meats, breads, handcrafted goods, live music, and family entertainment.